Jackie Robinson became a Brooklyn Dodger in 1947. Shortly thereafter, Larry Doby joined the Cleveland Indians. Within a few years, Willie Mays, Monty Irvin, Don Newcomb, and lots of other superb black ball players were starring in the majors. But as late as 1964, integrated baseball in Birmingham, Alabama was a risky proposition. In Southern League, a true story of baseball, civil rights, and the Deep South's most compelling pennant race, Larry Colton has written about the first integrated minor league team to play in that city. Larry, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thanks a lot, Bill. It's good to be here.
Let's start by discussing the void before the 1964 Barons season. There was no minor league baseball in Birmingham for the preceding couple of years. Why not?
Well, the major league had handed down an edict to the minor leagues that they needed to integrate. And Birmingham had strict rules called the Checkers Rule, where blacks and whites were not allowed to participate in any recreational activities together. And so the owner of the team, rather than go along with the major league edict, he pulled Birmingham out of what at the time was the Southern Association. And then shortly thereafter, because Birmingham was the main franchise in the league, the whole league folded.
The Checkers Rule literally prohibited a black child and a white child from playing checkers together.
It's correct, any activity. And the Birmingham police would, if they happened to drive by a sandlot and saw some kids out there, including Willie Mays, who grew up in Birmingham, and if they saw blacks and whites playing together, they went and busted up the game.
The Barons played in the Southern League in 1964, and your knowledge of that league goes well beyond the research you did for this book. Explain, please.
Well, I was a professional baseball player myself, including a cup of coffee in the major leagues. It was actually more a Dimitas. It was so short. In fact, Bill, I believe I've only played in one more big league game than you. I played in the Southern League in 1966. There was still a lot of segregation that went on, even in 66, 2 years after the Civil Rights Act had passed.
Well, that was the next thing I wanted to get to. Though the black players and white players on the Barons in 64 were teammates, customs in Birmingham and elsewhere around the Southern League prevented them from staying together in a hotel or eating in a restaurant together. Tell us a little bit about the mechanics of how that worked.
Well, the team bus would either let the white players off at the downtown white hotel, and then they would head out to a little dicier neighborhood and let off the black players, who would then stay at motels or boarding houses in most cases. Although one of the players, Tommy, a player by the name of Blue Moon Odom, who went on to star with the Oakland A's, said that the good part of that was they didn't have to worry about any curfew checks because the white manager wasn't going to trek all the way over to that part of town. And so they were pretty much on their own over there.
How did you feel as a player back in those days, 66 rather than 64, but still, when fans in places like Birmingham hurled insults at black players, even the players playing for the team they were rooting for?
Like all the other players on the team I played for, which were the Macon Peaches, as well as Birmingham, and after interviewing all of these guys, when you're 21 years old and your goal in life is to be a Major League Baseball player, your purpose in being there is not to change the world. Your purpose is to get to the big leagues. So while I was upset with what I saw, I was not a social activist, and we were certainly not freedom riders of any kind. But within the team, we bonded as it was sort of a us-against-them mentality.
The owner of the Barons, Albert Belcher, determined that for the 64 season, segregation in the stands at the ballpark should end. What did white fans and black fans make of that change when they showed up on opening day?
Well, the white fans and the black fans were very suspicious of it because they had never been integrated. They didn't sit next to each other at lunch counters or anything. They had always had a chicken wire fence that divided where the blacks couldn't sit on the home base side of this chicken wire fence, and their section to the whites was known as the coal bin. But Belcher took down the chicken wire fence. The first part of the season, the blacks tended to go back to where they had always been, but slowly they began to migrate to the better seats, and by the end of the season, it was an integrated stands.
The Barons, of course, were affiliated with the Kansas City Athletics, owned by Charlie Finley, and Finley made promises that he didn't keep. He said that he wouldn't raid the Birmingham roster until their pennant race was over, and then he took their best players, John Blue Moon Odom, Bert Campanaris, and several others, to Kansas City. How was he regarded by Haywood Sullivan and by the players who lost some of their teammates?
Not in high regard, although none of the players were going to say anything bad against him because he held the ticket to them getting to the major leagues. But what made it worse was that the A's were in last place, like 25 games out of first place. The AAA team was 25 games out of first place and last place. All of their A-League teams were in last place. So every team in the A's organization was in last place except the Barons, who were in first. By calling up Blue Moon or Bert Campanaris, this was a team that was going nowhere that year, although 4 or 5 years later they started a little mini dynasty and won 3 world championships.
Despite the fact that the Barons had a terrific season and they won a lot of games, there is a sense throughout the book that winning isn't the most important thing. Tell us a little bit about what the Barons accomplished for the city of Birmingham back in 1964.
The important thing was it set a model for how blacks and white can not only participate on the field together, but they could share in a common goal. They could sit next to each other in the stands. They could go to the same restroom. There were some people who worried that by allowing blacks and whites to go to the same restroom at Rickwood Field, that the whites would suddenly come down with a rash of venereal disease. And this is 17 years after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. This certainly had as equally, if not more profound, impact on a particular region because nothing disastrous happened, even though there was always the threat and the Ku Klux Klan was making bomb threats or whatever. There was always the threat that something was going to happen. Nothing ever did.
Larry Colton is the author of Southern League, A True Story of Baseball, Civil Rights, and the Deep South's Most Compelling Pennant Race. The book is published by Grand Central, and the author joined me from KOPB in Portland, Oregon. Larry, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Bill, it's been my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Only a Game.